I'm Brian Myers.
I'm Mike Ritalik.
I'm Becky Haddad.
And this is OwlPellets, a podcast featuring tips for ag teachers. We are your agricultural education resource across the web, sharing research-based tips and tackling the tough questions facing agriculture teachers every day.
Hey, OwlPellets, welcome back to another session of OwlPellets Tips for Ag Teachers podcast. This is Brian. I am here with Becky and Mike, and we are here by the OwlPellet, continuing this great conversation that even though she denies it, Becky is guiding for us because she is our mentor. She is the Obi-Wan Kenobi of OwlPellets.
Do I have to be Obi-Wan Kenobi? Like, my husband would die a little bit that I wouldn't want that role, but there are many cooler characters.
I've shared all my Star Wars knowledge right now, so I have no more Star Wars knowledge.
She wanted you to go Harry Potter.
Oh yeah.
We could go Harry Potter.
See.
We could definitely go Harry Potter.
So those of you that are listening, you need to put in your character in the comments as you're listening to this.
I'm a little afraid of what we're going to get in the comments on this.
It's probably good we don't get live comments here.
I kind of wish, like, yeah. We have said before that you're not my mentor until you see me cry. So if we had live comments, we might be able to prompt that a little more quickly, depending on what people... Who people equated me to.
But whether she admits it or not, Becky has led us through some great conversations here around the idea of mentoring. Today, we're going to be talking about assessment and evaluation of mentoring. So we've had this long journey that we have talked all the way about the inception of picking mentors and how do we go through mentors. And honestly, in addition to this great conversation for this report we've been talking about, we've had some great guests on this year as well talking about mentoring. So I don't know, Becky, kind of get our conversation going here. What do you want us to talk about today around the idea of assessment and evaluation?
Yeah, I think we were chatting a little bit before we actually started hitting record about this idea of how do you measure a relationship? Because so much of what we talked about in terms of how we've even conceptualized mentoring is really around this idea of the relationship that exists. And I think so often when we look at our mentoring programs, we have a different outcome than just having that relationship. Like, that relationship is a means to something else happening. If I think about, for example, our teacher induction programs, you know, certainly we want that relationship, but that relationship is almost a means to retention. It's a means to something else. And I think maybe to situate us a little bit, this chapter starts with this quote that I just really, really love. There's folly in hoping for a specific outcome if measures used to evaluate what's happening focus on something else entirely. And so maybe the question we can start with just broadly is, how do you measure a relationship? And neither of them know. So right. We're
crickets,
off to a really
crickets,
strong start.
Crickets. I think that's the hard part. I mean, that's part of what we're doing here in the work that we do. So much of what we do in teaching is about relationships, and we have these various scales. And in the report, there's all these different scales that are out there to try to approximate some sort of measurement around that is one of the challenges.
I mean, a huge challenge. Even in the report, they talked about 35 different scales for measuring, like validated scales for measuring mentorship, 35.
I think that speaks to the challenge, because we're talking about mentorship, which is a relationship in it, but it's kind of a one-on-one type relationship. And earlier we've talked about, you know, you go to different people for different forms of mentorship. And so it really does become really personal about what an individual would want out of this mentoring experience. And so to evaluate and assess it, you really probably need to backtrack a little bit and think about those traits and what you really wanted out of it in the first place.
When I was thinking about this topic for today, one of the notes I jotted down was, why do we assess?
Yeah.
And I think that is the real question, because there's so many ways of measuring this relationship. It's like, why are we assessing it? What do we want to do with it? And I think it's very different if I am the person in the mentoring relationship, I need to stop and assess where things are for a different reason than if I am the coordinator of the state ag teacher mentoring program, trying to assess the overall program to do those sort of things. And I guess where it got me thinking was about those, that different framing of assessing, but then also the fact that probably I don't do a good enough job of assessing my own relationships. We talk about this external relationship assessment. It's like the people that I mentor and the people I am mentored by. When's the last time I took 5 minutes to really think about where that relationship is? Am I putting into that relationship what I need to be? Am I getting out of that relationship what I need to be? That, to me, I think is a part of our conversation we could have as well.
Well, that brings in, again, some of the pieces that we've talked about earlier, I think, in terms of some of what's your responsibility in that mentoring relationship, and that on both sides, how do we think about what does this look like? I think we've talked a little bit before about kind of what's that exit strategy is, you know, are you mentored forever? Like, I commit to this mentoring relationship and I'm a mentor forever, or I'm a mentee forever. Well, that misses the growth opportunity that's part of that mentoring relationship. And so thinking about how do we know that that relationship is continuing to evolve with the people who are mentoring and being mentored.
I think Brian's got a great point. As we think about this, we really need to think about not only the micro level, I guess I would call it, where it's kind of the one-on-one and it's the internal for each of us as individuals, but also that macro level. So what's happening at the state level, the national level, with some formal mentoring programs, and how are they being evaluated, and thinking about what the outcomes are, what the purposes of mentoring programs are, and trying to measure and evaluate that's important, because if we don't, ultimately people are going to evaluate with their feet and they're not going to participate. They're not going to be engaged. And then we're going to be left scratching our head about what went wrong, or we got this great program and people aren't using it. And then the frustration kind of builds then. So I think this whole idea of evaluation certainly helps us to come full circle when we think about mentoring.
If I can go back there, Mike, a bunch of things that you said in there, I think is so key. You mentioned the word purpose several times in what you're talking about. And I think that goes back to not only now at the assessment part, but also ties back to one of our very first conversations, is if you're going to have a mentoring program, and in this case, we're talking about the larger scale, even a one-on-one, being crystal clear about what the purpose is. Because if it doesn't have a crystal clear purpose, you can't assess it or evaluate it. But I think if we go back and from reading all this report and other experience we've had, if no one knows exactly why you're doing this, people get frustrated. And it wanders away. And I mean, how many times have we done a new teacher program? We give this new teacher a mentor. They have no idea why. And the only goal is maybe that they both survive by the end of the school year. I don't know. We don't really say what we want them to be able to accomplish during that time. I think that's that to me is a key point too, as we're trying to develop mentoring programs. And just to let people know, I mean, I personally am not involved in designing ag teacher mentoring programs right now, but I'm personally involved in designing mentoring programs for faculty here at UF. And I'm using this stuff now to be thinking about how do we more clearly define those mentoring roles to help people, because I think there's application there as well.
If you don't know where you're going, how do you know when you get there?
Run out of gas.
Everywhere we go, there we are.
That's a quote that I live by right there.
I know my husband doesn't listen to this, but like, those are going to be Father's Day presents, I think, this year. The everywhere we go, there we are, and the kids are all going to get "Are we there yet?" shirts.
Yeah, right.
Like, it is the favorite road trip quote of the Haddad household. Not from anyone else but my husband, but that is the Hallmark road trip quote.
Love it. So anyway, what do we do with this?
Well, I think kind of to what you two were saying, one of the things that I think really was kind of striking about where our conversation has already been is that we often focus so much on those outputs. So thinking about that performance of the mentee, their motivation, their persistence, their career, but that's only one of several domains that are really kind of thought about in these scales. And I think while we think about those, like the number of validated scales around mentoring just being a ton, there are pieces of that that I think help us think about things like mentor matching and things like, how do we start to really define our purpose? Because I think we can say, you got to have a purpose. Well, that's all well and good, but how do I know where to start with defining that? And I think a couple things that those scales help us kind of start to think about are the inputs and the processes involved with mentoring. And so it's really kind of, how do we leave those listening with some some intention behind what am I doing here? So like inputs, thinking about prior performance and motivation and the similarity and the formality of the relationship. So thinking about just how does that develop, but then also thinking about even back to our definition of mentoring, what career support are we providing? What psychosocial support are we providing? When are we role modeling? What negative experiences are we trying to avoid? Or are we bringing to this relationship that may make it a little bit harder for us to get rolling with it? And I think all of those things tie into the relationship quality. But really, when we think about kind of those different domains, how do we get ourselves out of this outputs of just, well, we want to keep our teachers, we want to motivate them, we want them to be persistent, to really think about what are those pieces of career support and psychosocial support, going back to what mentoring really is, that we need to think about more intentionally in how we set up mentoring opportunities.
Absolutely. I mean, again, so much goes back to our own experience. As you're talking, I'm thinking back of backward design when we talk about curriculum development. We need to be doing the same thing here with these mentoring programs, understanding about where we want to be and then building the structure then to get to those pieces. So again, I think that's the big takeaway. Hopefully, one of the big takeaways people are getting from this is that as I begin to try to design and define these programs, I don't need to start with where we're starting. I need to start with where I want to end up. And I think as this program goes out, people hear this, you know, there's a lot of state teacher associations are going to be launching, new teachers are going to be hired probably in the next several months. We're going to be starting new teacher programs. I think it's really important for them to go back and build that entire program and know, where do you want to be a year from now? Not just what you're going to do to kick off this new teacher program in July or August. And again, we're all busy. We're all like, you know, if you're going to be organizing this for your state teachers association, this is not your full-time job. You're doing that on top of 87 other things, and I get that. But man, just building all those structures and looking at those inputs and the processes you mentioned there, Becky, in there, I think is going to be so critical. We're thinking out through the whole process, not just this just-in-time delivery.
And I think too, for those that are out in the state struggling and knowing that this isn't their full-time job, putting this process in place really does help kind of provide some comfort, I think, in knowing what needs to be done, what doesn't need to be done, and feel like you have a sense of accomplishment. Because I think this can be kind of squishy at time, or sand kind of running through our fingers, and being able to put some parameters around it feels like, yeah, we've accomplished what we set out to do, and we did these few things, and we were able to move the needle.
It probably also helps us keep our programs from getting stale. Yeah. When we think about how do we give ourselves some parameters to measure by and to structure our programs with, so that it's not the same thing we did 5 years ago. We have slightly different teachers than we did 5 years ago. We have different, like, they've been through a different world of teaching. Like, how are we maintaining adaptability in what we're doing that keeps what we're doing relevant, and especially keeps our mentors relevant? I think one of the things that comes to mind as we're talking about, especially our state level mentoring programs, is how do we really support our mentors in some of this? Like, we think a lot about the mentee and what we're trying to do for the mentee, but thinking about where we're getting mentors from. I had a note from earlier in our conversation, just that shortage of mentors is as real as our shortage of teachers. So what are we doing in our evaluation process to really make it a worthwhile experience and help develop the mentor role as well?
I think that's a critical point. You know, as you're talking, my mind goes back to a conversation we had earlier in the season with some folks doing some work on cooperating teachers. You know, and being a cooperating teacher is more than just being a mentor. But one of the things that you know, Deb Berry was finding was, you know, you got to provide training. For years, we just kind of thrown a great teacher, a student teacher, and say, well, you're a great teacher, so you're going to be a good student. You're going to be a good co-op teacher. We know that's not the case. We know that there are some really good teachers out there. They're phenomenal teachers that just aren't the greatest co-op teachers for a variety of reasons. And part of it, probably because we never trained them on how to do it. But I think the same thing here is happening with mentoring. What can we be doing to help people understand what it is? Because I know one of the big problems a lot of us face, or I face, is somebody comes up and wants to get in a mentoring relationship, and I jump in too fast saying, well, here's what I did, or here's what you should do. And that's not mentoring. That's answering questions. That is not mentoring and pouring into people. And so it takes time to develop those skills to truly mentor somebody through answering a problem.
And that's really highlighted toward the end of this chapter in this report, as far as what actually makes a difference in that mentoring relationship, and coming in and saying, you know, this is what I did, this is how I'm modeling this for you, these things are happening, didn't have a big difference on that relationship, where things like having a shared pathway to that current role, validating the mentee's ability, highlighting what they're doing well and the positives of the work, not just the tasks, but like overall why this thing, whatever thing we're mentoring in, is great. And offering those clear steps for improvement did. And I think even thinking about where do we get value out of that, like that's, I think you make a great point. How often do I say that, Brian?
Only when you're on mute.
Yeah, I'm just here basking in the glory of the fact that Becky said, oh, I just said something right, you know? Just like, letting it wash over me.
Just when you thought he was speechless, folks.
So Becky, we've talked about mentoring several times throughout this academic year, and we've referenced this document. So why don't we remind listeners what document we're talking about and where they might be able to find it if they need it as a resource?
Yeah, we're using the National Academies Press report on mentoring. And just as a reminder, that National Academies Press convened, we talked about this way at the beginning, but that National Academies Press report really, those are put together by convening experts in the area and really getting to a consensus about what these things are. So rather than a bunch of individual studies or, you know, even necessarily just individual summaries or synthesis, it really is a consensus from these experts on what constitutes these different areas of mentoring that we've been discussing over the season.
So it's a great resource, and I hope we'll post that there in the link with the websites and the podcast. So to go through there, there's a lot there, and these are big reports. I'm sure my colleagues here have read every word of those reports. I might have skimmed over a few sections, but there's good stuff in there. And hopefully our job here is hopefully to kind of give some of those highlights, because we think mentoring is so important. So Becky, as we kind of wrap up and summarize this section around assessment and evaluation, any final thoughts on what should we be doing to help make sure that we're doing this assessment and evaluation in a productive way?
Well, I think we've talked around it a couple of times, but knowing what you're trying to do with that mentoring, absolutely critical. I think there's also a piece that we didn't talk a ton about, and I don't want to necessarily introduce a new topic as we're trying to wrap up, but I think in considering, you know, those outcomes and how do we measure progress toward those outcomes, there's also a little bit of how do we make sure that happens efficiently. And I think we've kind of talked around that too, but thinking about, I mean, for you two seasoned mentors, how many people are you mentoring at any one time? They're nodding right now, since, you know, we're an audio only pod. We're mentoring a lot of people. Like, if I think about even for myself as somebody who's probably more often in the mentee role, like I'm being mentored by several people at a time. And there is a question in the report about really how do we implement those measures in a way that really help with probably the nuance that's across these different relationships, recognizing that even if the program has the same goal, the individual relationship may have a different, like, may need to have some different measures in place. And so how do we do that efficiently and effectively and with the people in mind? Because ultimately, regardless of the outcome of our program, we're still trying to measure a relationship.
Yeah, I think the big take home there for me is we're using the same word mentoring, and we're using it to talk about these mentoring programs. And then we're talking about this one-on-one relationship as well. And yes, it's all mentoring, and I get that, but it is so different. And I think when you're assessing and evaluating, what you're wanting to get out of those is very, very important as well. Because I would say, just as we're trying to develop a program, needs to know its overall goals, I go back and think about people I've talked to, and I said, I reached out to this person to learn about this specific aspect of my personal life, professional life, whatever else. And I have to evaluate, is that still a productive way of, is that mentoring role still being productive, or is it time to evolve? Does it evolve more into just a friendship? Does it time to evolve in that we just kind of separate and don't meet as often or whatever else? So I think those are okay in both of those settings, but I think you're right. We have to know whether it's a group or an individual.
Well, and we've had so many analogies and parallels to what we've done in other educational settings. And I think also it should be stating the obvious, but we probably need to think about formative as well as summative assessments as we're going through as well. And so it can be formal, it can be informal, those things. And so thinking holistically about this assessment piece is important too.
You say metaphor and analogy, even going back to the co-pilot relationship, at some point that plane lands.
Yeah. We hope.
One way or another.
One way or another. Like,
how far does this plane take me? All the way to the crash site. That's right. So
how do you make sure you land it and don't crash it? Like, part of this assessment piece.
Right. You know, it is. And I think that's good. And I think it's kind of good. We wrap this up. I know in the next time we're going to kind of be wrapping this thing up, we can unpack a little bit more, but we're talking about the responsibilities of each person has here. And I think, yes, there's the responsibility of the person that is planning and putting together the mentoring program to develop a good program that is based on a purpose and assess the proper way. But the person in the mentoring relationship has responsibility as well. And they can't just be recipient. They have to be active in sorting some of these things out in both the design, the purpose, the assessment and evaluation to know, you know, when to grow, when to stop each of these relationships. So very cool. We hope that you all out there have found this to be helpful. Whether or not you're where you are in the mentoring relationship, whether you're the one being mentored, the one doing the mentoring, whether it's a formal program or informally, I think it is important to make sure that you do have time to do that assessment, as we talked about here, both kind of at those ending points, but also along the way so that you know where to adjust from there. So hopefully you go in there and look at this section of the report. It's been a great conversation. Mike, Becky, I appreciate the opportunity to have just the three of us. It's like a special little time just for us. Because, who's listening?
I was going to say, I'm glad we get to share it with a broader audience, but maybe no one's listening.
My dad is.
There you go. Shout out to Becky's dad.
Yeah.
But again, hopefully you're finding this to be helpful. It's been a great mini series. And if you have missed the previous episodes of this particular mini series on mentoring, please go back and take a look at all of those. So for all of us here by the Owl Pellet, thanks a lot.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Owl Pellets. Check out our website for more information on this topic and to learn more about our guests. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram to stay connected. And be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you'll never miss an episode. For Mike and Becky, this is Brian here by the Owl Pellets saying thank you, and we look forward to seeing you again on another episode of Owl Pellets, Tips for Ag Teachers.